the August 2023 edition of Roundabout, the Dawlish and Tynemouth area talking newspaper's monthly magazine. I'm Camilla Taylor, and I'm joined by Fran Frank as my co-anchor this month.
Hello, everyone. Before we start the programme, here are some upcoming local events which you might wish to go to. From Saturday 12th to the Friday 18th of August, there is the Dawlish Celebrates Carnival. Events take place between 10:30 a.m. and 10:30 p.m. at the Lawn in Dawlish. The pram race and carnival parade will of course be around the town centre.
On Wednesday 16th, 23rd and 30th August, there is the RNLI merchandise stall at the Green in Dawlish Warren. This is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
On Friday, 18th of August, there is the Take a Chance on Us ABBA tribute from 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Pavilions, Tynemouth. For tickets, you can contact the Pavilions on 01626 249 049.
From Sunday, 20th to Monday, 28th August, there is the Shawldon Regatta. This will be from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day, with various beach events taking place. Entry charge is £1 per person and free to under-16s. Contact Ray Edworthy on 07833 704 614. I repeat, 07833 704 614, or you can email him on ray.edworthy@btinternet.com.
On Monday, 21st of August, there is the Dawlish Celebrates Seaside Fun at the Piazza, which is the bottom of the lawn. This will take place from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. There will be family-friendly Punch and Judy, flea circus, storytelling and juggling. These activities are all free, but they are weather dependent, so I'd suggest you check the forecast before leaving home and take a brolly with you just in case.
On Friday, 25th August, there will be the New Jersey Boys show at the Shaftesbury Theatre in Dawlish. Showtimes are 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tickets are £19 per person. The Shaftesbury Theatre telephone number is 01626 863 061.
Since you won't be receiving the September roundabout until the middle of the month, here are some events that will be taking place in early September. Sunday, 3rd of September, there is the Dawlish Bike and Trike Show from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the lawn. There will also be live music and stalls. All proceeds raised will go to helping Armed Forces veterans and their dependents. £3 per bike entry. Pedestrians are free. Contact Amanda and Paul Power on their email, which is wolfpackafb, which is spelled wolfpackafb, all one word, at hotmail.com.
Sunday, 3rd September is Merchant Navy Day at the Piazza, bottom of the lawn, in Dawlish at 2:30 p.m. There will be flag raising organised by Dawlish Town Council.
From Friday the 8th of September to Sunday the 10th of September, there will be the Teen Maritime and Shanty Festival at various venues around Tynmouth and Shoreditch. Times are Friday, 8th of September, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m, Saturday the 9th and Sunday the 10th will be from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m.
The following are some of the regular monthly events in Dawlish and Tynmouth. On the last Saturday of each month, there is a craft fair from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Strand Centre in Dawlish.
On the 26th of August, there is a mini craft fair at the Pavilions in Tynmouth from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m.
On every second Friday of the month, there is the Tynmouth Comedy Night at the Pavilions in Tynmouth from 8 p.m. to 10:15 p.m. Entry is £12.50 to book or £14.50 on the door. The Pavilion's telephone number is 01626 249 049.
On the last Saturday of the month, there is the Tynmouth Farmers Market at the Triangle from 10 a.m. till 2. Local farmers and producers sell a wide range of food they have grown or produced themselves.
Now that we have given you details of the events that are due to take place locally, let's move on to what we have in store for you in the August roundabout.
There is the Jennifer Meets interview with Laura Hughes, followed by her choice of music.
Valerie Forrester shares some useful information about audio-described performances at the Northcott Theatre in Exeter. This will be followed by Fran reading a poem.
Mary MacDonald and Stephen Taylor will be discussing the book Grandmothers by Sally Vickers.
Aileen Clarkson will be giving an account of her visit to the Sistine Chapel in Rome.
There will be some sitting exercises from Babs Astley.
And finally, John Townsend will be in conversation with clarinetist Phil Bonser. Phil will also be playing excerpts of well-known pieces of music.
We start off with Jenny Jenkins and her guest, Laura Hughes.
Hello, listeners. Today we have a very interesting lady to introduce you to. Her name is Laura Hughes, and she is the supporting the mover of www.moorvision.org. So welcome to Here and Now, Laura, and I hope you had a comfortable journey here from Ivy Bridge.
Hello, Jenny. Thank you ever so much for inviting me to come and speak here today. It was a very easy journey, thank you. No problems at all.
I know you're a very busy lady and you've got to rush off to help another family with your talents, and that's in Lostwithiel.
So
we'll talk as quickly as possible. Can you start off by telling me where you were born? Because you don't sound like a Devon lady.
No, I'm not. Well, I'm not really a Devon lady. I was born in the swinging 60s, but I was too young to really appreciate that, in East London. So a really long way from beautiful Devon. But I have been here since 1988.
Oh, jolly good. Well, let's talk about your education and what were your interests then.
I loved school and I worked really hard. And I was particularly good at science. It's what I wanted to do. I did lots of other things. I sang in the school choir. I played the piano, though not very well. I went to Girl Guides, but I wasn't at all sporty. I was dreadful at sports.
You can't be good at everything.
No.
So what happened when you finished your education?
When I left school, I went to university and I studied botany because I loved plants so much. I also enjoy reading, travelling, learning foreign languages, and I still love singing, and I sing in a choir. So I travelled for a little while, and then I took a job with the RNIB, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, transcribing science and other kind of educational material into Braille and large print for blind people. So it was really interesting work.
And then after that, what happened to you? What was your proper job?
My proper job? Well, I I was working at RNIB when, after I was married, I'm married to a lovely Welshman, and actually we've just celebrated our silver wedding anniversary last weekend.
So, oh, congratulations.
It was really lovely. Oh. And we'd moved to Devon together, and I was still working with RNIB. And then we had our first child late in 1998. It was apparent really from her birth that her eyes weren't right.
Oh.
But at first we thought it was just, you know, we thought it was just a squint. We didn't think it was anything at all serious. But as she became older, we began to realise that she really couldn't see very well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was looked at the hospital, and they eventually diagnosed her with a really unusual sight condition called ocular motor palsy, which means that the nerves...
Ocular motor palsy.
Yeah, and it just means that the nerves that control the movements of the eyes don't really work properly, so she doesn't really have that control over her eye movements.
How old would she have been when you realised that it was that serious?
She was diagnosed with that at about 5.
Before school, then?
Just before school. And she had surgery, which helped. It helped how she appeared, because cosmetically it helped, but it didn't improve her eyesight, unfortunately.
Okay.
So she doesn't see very well in her right eye at all, and she can see close up with her left eye, but not anything really at distance, and she needs things in large print and alternative formats.
So having it first-hand experience, that moved you on in your work, really, I suppose.
Well, I was just carrying on like you do, and she was such a bright, happy little girl. And she got to 7 years old, and she said to me very crossly one day, she said, "Mummy," she said, "I've never met another little girl with poorly eyes before."
Oh.
And I thought, gosh, she hadn't. You know, we'd never come across another child who was visually impaired. We'd met children with many other disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, where are all these children? That she can't be the only one. And actually, we learnt that actually there are very few children with visual impairment. They're all dotted around villages and towns, and sort of there's often one in each village and town.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at a meeting for parents with children with disabilities, and I actually managed to find two or three other families who had children with visual impairments, and we met up and we stayed in touch and we took the children out and had a lovely time. But it wasn't good enough for my daughter, because, you know, they had babies and teenagers, and she said to me, "Mummy, I still haven't made that special friend." I felt like a dreadful dear parent.
Oh, what's her name, by the way?
Her name is Tiri, T-I-R-I.
Oh, that's lovely.
And she's 24 now.
But what a sensitive little girl to be, and how lucky she could tell you that.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So by the end of that year, we had 10 families in the group. And by the end of the next year, I remember we had 23. And each year, more and more families from around Devon and then Plymouth and then Cornwall joined us.
And how were you linking up with them?
Well, it was just at the start. It was mostly email. It was just at the start of the sort of social media time, and that was actually quite helpful for this.
And that would have been what year when she was?
This would have been in about 2005, 2006.
Yes.
And we would meet 4 times a year and do something interesting.
Mm.
And I feel since then I've just blinked, and we now have. It's 16 years since that first meeting, and we have an office in Ivy Bridge. We have 5 staff, and we're looking after almost 250 children with vision impairment now.
Yes.
Right across the whole of Devon and Cornwall. And we do a really big range of services, so we do lots of things. We do lots and lots of activities. They do canoeing and climbing and zip wiring and sailing.
And the age range, of course.
Oh, the age range. We start from naught and we go up to 25, so it's a really wide age range. And we always say, no challenge is too big. In fact, last weekend we had 24 children out doing windsurfing in Cornwall.
Windsurfing?
Mm. This weekend we've got 80 people coming to the audio-described theatre production Demon Dentist at the Plymouth Theatre Royal. And the following weekend, we've got 80 people coming on a weekend activity residential.
Oh.
Well, they'll be climbing, rafting.
And where is that based?
That's up in North Devon.
North. And who does all the planning for these activities?
Well, when we were smaller, I did everything.
Can imagine.
I've now got two wonderful people who work for me who do the they plan and organise the activities. I've got another lady working for me who's also fantastic, who does the she does family support. Mm-hmm. And we've also got somebody, we've got another wonderful, they're all wonderful, another wonderful lady who does all of our accounts.
What a team, eh?
We are a bit of a team. And we don't just do activities, we also do a lot of well-being support. We do a lot of help with education because there are, you know, there are laws that have to be followed for these children's education.
Yes.
And unfortunately, there is such a lack of funding for schools and local authorities that sometimes things go wrong.
Oh, dear.
And we do acknowledge it's not really anyone's fault. It's because they're all, you know, there is a real lack of funding. But we try and work with everyone together to get the best outcome for each child.
Have you any other children or is Thierry?
I do. We had a son 3 years later and he's called Tom. And he is about to start an audio engineering degree in London. And Thierry, amazingly, is a fifth-year medical student.
She's nearly a doctor.
This time next year, she will be a doctor.
Oh, what an achievement.
And she's one of the, I think she's her university's first young person with a visual impairment to become a doctor.
And where is she at the moment?
She is at Oxford.
I can see your face absolutely beaming. What a proud mummy you are of your beautiful babies.
I am.
That's wonderful. And how does your husband fit in? Does his work enable him to be part of your team or does he have a separate employment?
He has completely separate employment. He's a cook. And though he's not directly involved with the charity, he's incredibly helpful with, you know, all the things like loading and unloading the car. And,
brilliant.
You know, just he's as both the children have been over the years,
he's
very supportive. And I often work very long hours. We don't get any government funding or anything like that. We have to rely entirely on grants. And I'm often working really, really hard on heel. He picks up the slack at home.
Wonderful. Well, especially with his career, with being a chef, as you said. We're getting awfully near to the end of our time slot, as always, sadly. So I'd just like to repeat the website for our listeners who are able to get onto it. It's www.moorvision.org. That's all lowercase, and More Vision is all one word. So if they get on that, if they need help themselves or know a friend who might, that would be of great use
of
with all the details.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. And though we don't work with adults with visual impairment, we can always signpost people to other places that would support them.
You're covering a whole lot of ground, aren't you, with that?
We try.
Yes. And I know you've got to go off. And again, you're helping another family with difficulties.
Yeah, they're having difficulties with their child's education, so we will go and...
And you do it personally, one-to-one?
Yes, we do. Yes,
I think this is the most amazing thing I've heard for a very long time.
That's the nice thing to say.
Well, I can only offer you the reward for coming here of choosing a piece of music that you'd like us to play you out with and the reason why you chose it.
Okay, so my choice of music is A Million Dreams, which comes from The Greatest Showman musical. Yeah. And I think it's because the lyrics really reflect the hopes that I have for all the children that we work with.
Thank you very much indeed. Well, we shall enjoy listening to that. So, very sadly, we have to say goodbye and you dash off on your mission of mercy once more. So, to all our listeners, bye-bye.
Goodbye and thank you.
Thank you again, Laura. Bye-bye.
Close my eyes and I can see a world that's waiting up for me that I call my own. Through the dark, through the door, through where no one's been before, but it feels like home. They can say it all sounds crazy. they can say I've lost my mind. I don't care, so call me crazy. We can live in a world that we desire. Special things I compile, each one there to make you smile on a rainy day. They can say it all sounds crazy. They can say we've lost our minds. I don't care if they call us crazy. Run away to a world that we desire.
Every night I lie in bed, the brightest colors fill my head. A million dreams keeping me awake. I think of what the world could be, a vision of the one I see. A million dreams is all it's gonna take. For the world we're gonna make.
However big, however small, let me be part of it all. Share your dreams with me. You may be right, you may be wrong, but say that you'll bring me along to the world you see, to the world I close my eyes.
The brightest colors fill my head.
A million dreams are keeping me awake.
A million dreams.
I think of what the world could be, a vision of the one I see. A million dreams is all it's gonna take.
That song was A Million Dreams from the musical The Greatest Showman, sung by Hugh Jackman and Michelle Williams. We now have Valerie Forrester.
Hello, this is Valerie here. Some information from the Northcote Theatre in Exeter about some performances that are coming up that are going to be audio described. And I thought you might be interested in making a note. The first one is Frankenstein, 1943. Whilst Europe tears itself apart, two women hide from their past at what feels like the very end of the world, and one of them has a terrifying story to tell. This new thriller is inspired by the classic Gothic novel and complete with a stunning original score, explores the very fabric of what makes us human and the ultimate cost of chasing perfection. This audio-described performance is on Saturday, the 30th of September at 2:30, and I'll give you the telephone number at the end. And the second performance they're giving is King Arthur. Camelot is in trouble, and King Arthur knows that if he doesn't turn things around, this civilization will be forgotten and be known as nothing more than a rather dull time in British history. But when three hapless squires approach him about changing that legacy, a legend is born. And that audio performance is on Thursday, the 26th of October at 7:30 p.m. Then the third one is Dick Whittington, the pantomime. If you only see one show this Christmas, this is it. And they say that it's as good as Robin Hood was, or any of the pantomimes, but this one is Dick Whittington. So expect plenty of laughs, great music, amazing special effects, and full-on fun for every generation with this fabulous rags-to-riches tale. And that performance is on Sunday, the 10th of December at 2:30. If you want to ring the box office, the number is 01392 726363. This is just a preview to tell that these performances are taking place, and I will remind you of them nearer the time. Thank you. Bye.
Fran will now be reading a poem you may not have heard in a long time.
Hello. Here is a poem by John Keats, who stayed in Teignmouth in 1818. It's called Devon Maid. Where be ye going, you Devon maid? And what have ye there in the basket? Ye tight little fairy, just fresh from the dairy, will you give me some cream if I ask it? I love your meads, and I love your flowers, and I love your junkets mainly. But hind the door, I love kissing more. Oh, look not so disdainly. I love your hills, and I love your dales, and I love your flocks a-bleating. But oh, on the heather to lie together, with both our hearts a-beating. I'll put your basket all safe in a nook. Your shawl I'll hang up on this willow. And we will sigh in the daisy's eye, and kiss on a grass-green pillow.
It was very interesting listening to a poem in Old English, and read by a local Devonian to boot.
Not sure if that was a compliment or not, Camilla. Anyway, here are Stephen Taylor and Mary MacDonald with their book review of the month.
Hello, listener. This month, Stephen and I have read Grandmothers by Sally Vickers, a small book, very nice and easy to read, about people we would be familiar with, maybe through ourselves or our friends, and of course, most of us had a grandmother we can remember. It's the little things in it that make the story, really. There is no great plot. It's a coming together of three ladies with grandmother status. One is not her own granddaughter, but she's taken it on. And their devotion to those children, it's that that comes through the most. And through their different paths, the ladies come into contact with each other, and the children befriend each other. And that's all it's about. But it's lovely.
Which is, because this is a really important subject, and one that is, as you say, we've all had grandmothers, and a lot of people have a relationship with their grandchildren. It's a particularly nice relationship. It's a lovely thing, the relationship you have with your grandparents, in all kinds of different ways, and it's not generally written about. So what I liked about this was that it was dealing with a subject and a type of love, a type of relationship that you don't read about frequently. And it's just lovely. So you have here three grandmothers. I think they're in their 60s. They're not that old.
They've still got plenty going. I think one's in the 60s and one's well up in the 70s, okay, I think.
Well. And one's called Nan, one's called Minna, one's called Blanche. She's a slightly eccentric alcoholic shoplifter. And then Minna lives in a shepherd's hut and reads Proust. And Nan's a little bit more normal. So they have eccentricities, and they are generally in London area, I think. And it's just really about their relationship with their grandchildren. And it's very sweet, and all kinds of things happen, and they support each other. A very gentle story, but it keeps you going, keeps you turning the pages, listening. It's really well done.
It's touching. It's touching. Also mentions the subject that, of course, grandparents have no rights. There's nothing you can do or say. But they all have these lovely relationships where they have conversations which they sense that the parents wouldn't be very keen on them having. The children are very different. Nan is a secret poet, a secret published poet. And you get the sense that all the time she's living this life with these children and these ladies she's come across, it could be another poem. She's growing something. But in actual fact, she has an epic on the go. But she is eccentric. She's planned her own funeral. And she has her coffin, which she practices in. And Blanche, who has recently been bereaved, goes through the suffering which many of us have all gone through, not to the extent of alcoholism and shoplifting, but it's all amusing. It's all amusing and well dealt with.
It is. And yes, you're right. If there are villains in this, the villains are the parents. So it's the grandmothers and the grandchildren, in a way, ganging up against their parents, breaking the rules their parents set. I think there is something of that in relationship with grandchildren sometimes.
Absolutely. I think all grandmothers revel in that. I do. And I have a granddaughter who isn't a granddaughter. And we have the most amazing conversations, but she's so clued up. She's only 13, going on 14, 14 going on 28, as a lot of people will recognise in their granddaughters. But it's these lovely relationships, the things that you are aware that those conversations will be confidential. The relationship with the little boy, Billy, he's sharp. He knows how to manipulate, but he's truthful. He's truthful in that he wants to know why. But also the ladies are all inside against the mothers.
Yeah, the daughters-in-law. That mother-in-law-daughter-in-law relationship is such a difficult one. And they deal with it really amusingly, but there is some tension there. And again, this isn't something that you very frequently see portrayed in books. Yet it's a really important part of our lives.
As a normal yeah. process as well. Yeah. I mean, the one mother is a single parent now, but you sense that there is a relationship building between that young woman and the grandmother as she moves on to a new stage in her life. Nothing's ever developed on these things. It's all concentrated with the women and the children, but it's fun, especially the friend with the hair and the rings and the the other naughtinesses.
Yeah, it's all very modern, that's the other thing.
It's absolutely
contemporary. So it's lots of references there to, you know, IT and the celebrity culture and the stuff that, you know, people do have around us. This is a very, very current book.
And very modern relationships. That's the other thing about it. Very modern relationships. I really enjoyed it. I would read it again for that.
The title of the book that Stephen and Mary have reviewed is Grandmothers by Sally Vickers. This book is available in hardcover, paperback, and as a downloadable audiobook.
This month, Aileen is taking a break from her letter from a dog walker, and instead, we have a recording of hers from several years ago of her visit to the Sistine Chapel in Rome.
Thank you. have just returned from a short holiday in Rome. In common with most visitors to the Eternal City, I went to see the Sistine Chapel. First, it is necessary to make the long march through the galleries of the Vatican Museum, which contain examples of man's artistic endeavours from 3,000 years before Christ to the present day. There is enough culture to fill a week, let alone a few hours, and it is wisest to use the services of a guidebook to select those pieces noted as being of particular interest. What strikes me always when visiting any museum is the ingenuity of man to create objects of originality and great beauty. All that effort, all that skill, applied to what the maker could do best. With a blister developing on the ball of my left foot, I limped down the narrow enclosed stairs to the approach of the Sistine Chapel, and through a small door, like a cork out of a bottle. I am standing in a place where loving hands of great genius have created depictions of events described in the Bible. Every inch of the walls and ceiling is covered in paintings. The original colours recently revealed by years of careful cleaning are bright and clear. Here is a place where effort was not wasted. A few men from the past have left their visions in art to the glory of God. Only the best were chosen to leave their mark on history, and they were chosen well. None more so than Michelangelo, who was given the task of covering the ceiling and the altar wall. There is a logical progression of scenes across the ceiling from the Old Testament. The famous creation of man is in the very centre of the ceiling, with the forefinger of God touching the forefinger of Adam. Not only did Michelangelo have to be an accomplished plasterer and painter, but he had to have the imagination of one inspired to have thought up something so perfect. His God is strong and commanding, awesome and alive. Having been lucky enough to find a seat, I sit with my head thrown back to marvel at it all. Here, surrounded by all this beauty, popes are elected. At times, when hordes of people are not wandering across the mosaic floor, religious services are performed in ordered tranquillity. The altar wall is no less magnificent than the ceiling, but it is different. Where the ceiling is like a story unfolding, the altar wall depicts the Last Judgment as stark realism. In the centre, a daunting, selective figure of Christ stands surrounded by saints and worthies, who have all made it into heaven. Below, at stages, crowds of people are trying with varying success to climb the invisible ladders to join them. There is great urgency about it all. The expressions are so intense, and there is such longing. In those who are at the very bottom of the wall, which must be hell, there are a few displaying resignation and despair. It all gives the impression that in the artist's mind there is no doubt that there is a heaven and a hell, and like being a member of any group, there is a rigorous selection process. As an aspiring artist, I wondered, had I been asked to imagine a depiction of the Last Judgment, how would I have portrayed it? Could I have done better to convey the impression of certainty and at the same time made it look desirable? Could I have in any different way conveyed the feeling of joy or longing, doubt or despair? No, I couldn't. Michelangelo has found the definitive without the wings of angels and ethereal gates. His is an earthy depiction of a thoroughly possible reality, and I'm certain he was inspired. Back home now, thinking about what I've seen, my humdrum life seems so small and insignificant compared to the achievements of others. We cannot all be Michelangelo. His light comes along very seldom. But we can all be good at what we do best. We may be good at gardening or decorating, sewing or caring for others. The memory of each one of us will be around long after we've gone, if we have excelled in what we do best. ¶¶
What a fascinating audio description of the Sistine Chapel, and from a youthful sounding voice of Aileen's.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? It's now over to Babs Astley.
Hello. It's a while now since we did any exercises, so I thought perhaps we'd do a few. Unfortunately, I've not been well throughout the winter and I've been unable to do any, but I hope you've been able to carry on. In case you haven't, I'm going to start off with a couple of simple ones, and they're both sitting exercises. These sitting exercises can be done at home and will help improve your mobility and prevent falls. So, you should be able to sit with your feet flat on the floor and knees bent at right angles. Avoid chairs with arms, as these will restrict your movement. Wear loose, comfortable clothing and keep some water handy. So build up slowly and aim to gradually increase the repetitions. Try to do these exercises at least twice a week. Okay, we'll start off with the chest stretch. This one is good for posture. Sit upright and away from the back of the chair. Pull your shoulders back and down. Extend your arms out to the side. Now gently push your chest forward and up until you feel a stretch across your chest. Hold for 5 to 10 seconds and repeat 5 times. So here we go. Sit upright. Pull your shoulders back and down. Extend your arms out to the side. Gently push your chest forward and up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll start off with 5. Again, upright and away from the back of the chair. Pull your shoulders back and down. Extend your arms out to the side. Gently push your chest forward and up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Again. Sit upright and away from the back of the chair. Pull your shoulders back and down. Extend your arms out to the side. Gently push your chest forward and up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And once more, sit upright and away from the back of the chair. Pull your shoulders back and down. Extend your arms out to the side. Gently push your chest forward and up, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, well done, and relax. The next one is called the upper body twist, and this stretch will develop and maintain flexibility in the upper back. So sit upright with your feet flat on the floor, cross your arms and reach for your shoulders. Without moving your hips, you're going to turn your upper body to the left as far as is comfortable and hold for 5 seconds and then repeat on the right side. Okay, so sit upright, feet flat on the ground, cross your arms and reach for your shoulders. Turn your upper body to the left. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Back to the centre and turn your upper body to the right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, sit upright again with your feet flat on the floor. Cross your arms and reach for your shoulders. And without moving your hips, turn your upper body to the left. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And back to the centre. And turn your upper body to the right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Again, upright, feet flat on the ground, cross your arms and reach for your shoulders. Turn your upper body to the left and hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Back to the centre. Turn your upper body to the right and hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And back to the centre. We'll do this one more time. So sit upright with your feet flat on the floor. Cross your arms and reach for your shoulders. And without moving your hips, turn your upper body to the left as far as you can. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Back to the centre. And turn your upper body to the right. 1, two, three, four, five. Back to the centre and relax. Well done. Okay, well, I hope that gets you started again, and maybe next time we'll do a couple more. Good luck. Bye.
Now that we're invigorated with those exercises, let's sit back, if you can, and enjoy John Townsend's interview.
Hello, I'm John Townsend, and welcome to another of my Performing Arts Devon Dialogues, where I have the privilege of chatting with talented local musical and theatrical performers. Today I'm delighted to welcome Phil Bonser to our Dawlish studio, who has just hopped off the train from Exeter, bringing your precious friend with you, Phil. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
Well, before you tell us about your music making, and you have performed in this very building with fellow musicians, back along, as we say in Dawlish, let me read from the programme of one of your recent concerts. It says, Phil Bonser, B-Muse, Ons, AKC. Phil read music at King's College London from 1990 to 1993, studying clarinet with the wonderful Angel Malmesbury at the Royal Academy of Music in London. After 2 years as a primary school teacher in London, he escaped into the world of corporate IT, working for Marks & Spencer, then Debenhams. In 2009, he set up his own business, The Friendly Computer Man. Musically, Phil has continued to teach and play since graduating from King's and now enjoys giving regular concerts. Since 2016, he has played a highly prized Peter Eaton elite clarinet. His favourite lunch is cheese with tomato on toast, and he likes to wear rainbow socks. Well, I'm afraid I can't provide the cheese and tomato, but hey, I put some rainbow socks on.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, and you don't have any.
Oh, okay. Today I've let you down.
Well, I thought I'd make you feel at home anyway. So, let's see. Obviously, you've had an almost lifelong love affair with a clarinet. How did all that start?
Well, we moved down to Christchurch, Dorset, when I was seven. And there was you could have guitar lessons at the school. And this would be with Mr. Mallet, who is a retired army musician, and you'd be sort of one of 10 strumming away pretty badly, but then he would get his clarinet out and play marvelous things over the top while we were all strumming G, D, F. And I thought, well, I'd much rather be doing that than strumming this guitar. So my mum asked him, would he give me lessons? And he said, well, yes, he would if he's going to practice and, you know, make a serious job of it.
So do you have musical genes? Is there music in the family?
No, I mean, mum plays the piano quite nicely. My dad was a keen amateur musician. I think one relative, maybe a great aunt, prayed for the silent movies.
Okay.
But we've not, you know, we don't have a sort of long heritage.
There was a sort of a eureka moment when you thought, oh, I like that sound.
Yes.
And you sort of thought, oh, I want to play that. Now, when you say seven, you were seven at the time.
Yeah.
So would you have played a full-size clarinet or what?
Yeah, so when you learn the clarinet, typically you're going to start on the standard instrument that is used most of the time. Okay. There are lots of different shapes and sizes of clarinets, but the one that most of us play and the one you see in orchestras and so forth is the soprano clarinet.
Uh-huh.
And so that was the one that you would start and play.
And your little seven-year-old fingers could cope with all the...
Just about. My little fingers are a little short and they struggled a little bit to reach the end keys on each joint, but just about. And then, yes, obviously, as your fingers grow, that becomes a little easier.
And then I suppose your very first performance. Do you remember it?
I do. Well, Mr. Mallet was a great, I mean, he was very strict, but he was also very kind, and he encouraged lots of children to do lots of things. And he organized an end of year concert for the school. He said, right, Philip, he said, I think we're going to get you to play Stranger on the Shore by Acca Bilk. And that was the first ever piece that I played in a concert. And later on, I might give you a little flavor
of that. Oh, we would love that. Okay. Now, moving on, did you play in orchestras as you through school?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was after when I left primary school and went to secondary school, I had a new teacher who was wonderful, Raymond Carpenter, who was at the time the principal clarinetist with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. And so I have a very strong, he's died now. I mean, he was sort of retiring age at the time. But wonderful player, so encouraging. And yes, I played in the Bournemouth Youth Orchestra, the Dorset Youth Orchestra, another orchestra in Christchurch. It's so important when you're learning to not just be playing on your own at home.
And having gifted teachers. I mean, that's
absolutely, someone that's inspiring.
And then I presume you did you do music A-level? And you
I did, yes.
And then decided you wanted to go to study music in London.
Yes, I mean, I didn't really know what would happen after that, but I knew for sure that what I wanted to do was to do some serious musical study. Mm. And there were lots of courses around, being a clarinetist, but also interested in the sort of the academic side of music as well, I decided to do a degree.
Yeah.
And the perfect course came up for me because at King's, when you do a music degree, you get instrumental tuition at the Royal Academy.
Wow.
So best of both worlds, I thought.
So the creme de la creme. And did you have to do an audition to get into your?
Yeah, absolutely. For every if you go to the academy or to any musical sort of, you have to audition. So I was very lucky. My school music teacher, Norman Higgins, very, very good pianist, and he was kind enough to come with me to a number of my university auditions and play the piano in my, in the sort of the practical element. So, I might be playing a little later one of those audition pieces.
Well, aren't we in for a treat? Well, I can see your rather special instrument here. In your notes, it says it's an elite.
Yeah, so from the outside, clarinets look very much the same. They're usually made of wood or plastic if you're a student instrument. That's what I started on, and with silver keys. But once you start playing, you realise that there's this lot of subtle differences. Mm. One of them is how wide the bore is on the inside of the clarinet, sort of going down the middle. And most instrumentalists play on a slightly narrower bore instrument than me, but I started to play on what was called a Boosian Hawks 1010 at about the age of 15. Slightly wider bore, more air needed to make it sound good, but the idea is that the wider the pipe, the richer the sound. Unfortunately, those Boosian Hawks stopped making those instruments, and no other manufacturer in the world makes them, except for Peter Eaton, who is a London-based maker. And he thought, this is crazy, this lovely English tradition of slightly wider bore clarinets is being lost. So he actually set up a little workshop and started making by hand a very small number of select clarinets, and a lot of the top players now use his instruments, particularly the English players. And I was lucky enough to buy one from him. He only makes a very small number these days because he's in his 70s. But yes, I've had this one since 2016, and enormous difference made.
Okay, the sound is just...
Yes, I can tell. And what's even lovelier is that other people were able to tell. I thought, maybe this is a very niche thing and no one will realise that it's any different. But so many people have said to me, your tone is just that richer and you seem to be able to play so quietly, yet we can still hear you. I attribute that to the clarinet.
I think it's time to stop the talking, Phil. We really need a little sound. I guess, the range of the instrument, what's that? Can you give us a little...
I can. So I'll give you just a little demo of the range of the clarinets. It goes from a bottom E, which is this note. So that's the bottom of what's called the Shalimo register, which plays up through these notes. That's about there. We're in the middle range there. And then we go on to the next range. And now we're going to go right up to the top into the altissimo range, which gets very high and quite squeaky. It's not always the most beautiful bit of the clarinet. So you can see right from... You can get right up there. And I think it's the woodwind instrument with the biggest range in its repertoire. Certainly much bigger than the oboe or the flute.
And how much work do you do with your mouth to do that?
A lot. It's the pressure of the lips on the reed, obviously the finger holes, but a lot of fingerings are the same. for different notes, and you're either pressing a key at the back to open the register key, or you're playing harmonics by altering the air and the embouchure.
Right. I was going to say the embouchure, you call it. Yes. I spoke recently to a brass player, and same thing, really.
Yes.
Brilliant. Now, I think it might be time for us to try something that we've never done before. I know we're both fans of a certain piece by Prokofiev. I'll give listeners a little clue. Bum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum 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 bum. I know it's not as good as the clarinet, but you know. So, in tribute to the late Barry Humphries, who as Dame Edna Everidge recorded Peter and the Wolf, perhaps we can offer our own version as never heard before. So here goes. Hello, possums! Here is the spooky story of Peter and the Wolf, where the part of the cat is played so daintily on the clarinet by the maestro Phil Bonser. So brace yourselves, listeners. Peter strolled into the meadow outside his grandfather's home. Suddenly something caught Peter's attention. It was a cat crawling through the grass. The cat thought, "Oh, the bird is arguing. I'll just grab him." Stealthily, she crept towards him on her velvet paws. And suddenly, the cat scampered up the tree and grabbed the bird. Wow, I think it's just as though the cat was in the room, wasn't it, with us? Well, now, I know that you do quite a few concerts around Devon. You might later want to tell us your next gig and, you know, give us some sort of a bit of advertising. I think you've got one or two other little pieces that you might want to demonstrate. That's perhaps a fair... What are the most popular pieces you play, would you say?
So we're always... People are very keen to hear anything by Mozart. Mozart wrote two wonderful pieces for the clarinets, which are probably right at the centre of the repertoire. So a concerto and then a quartet. So a string quartet plus a clarinet, making it a quintet. So I'm going to play you a very little bit from the slow movement of the concerto.
Oh, right.
Then the other, I mean, the big names in clarinet repertoire, you've got Brahms wrote quite a lot of music for the clarinet. Usually composers had a mate who was a good clarinetist, and that usually was the inspiration. Weber wrote a lot for the clarinet, a lot of show pieces. Again, he had a mate who was a fantastic player, and he really extended the instrument. Extra keys were added as a result of one of his compositions. Coming into this century, we've got Gerald Finzi, who wrote the wonderful Five Bagatelles a lovely concerto. There's plenty by Schumann, and a lot of sort of middle of the century, last century English composers really picked that out, the clarinet, for its sort of beauty and mellow sound. And
you also, I mean, you've got a wide range of repertoire. I know you also do some jazz numbers and
love doing that as well.
A bit of Gershwin. And,
indeed.
if we hear a bit of the Mozart, would the instrument, I mean, he must have written this, 250 years ago, it would have been a slightly different instrument then.
It actually was written for what's called the basset horn, which is still a clarinet, but it has some extra notes at the bottom. There are still basset horns around, but they are sort of antique instruments and, you know, expensive and rarely needed. So almost always now the concerto is played on the normal soprano clarinet.
Brilliant. So let's listen to the slow movement. For those who are film buffs, they will recognise it, I think, from Out of Africa.
So I'm going to play sort of the last 30 bars, which includes the main theme.
Thank you.
Absolutely marvellous, thank you. Wow. Yeah. Now, you've got some concerts, as I say, coming up, and I know you play particularly with a wonderful accompanist on the piano.
Yes.
Tell us one or two of the pieces that you're working on now.
Sure, yeah. Dorothy's wonderful accompanist. We really enjoy our rehearsals. I think we'd rehearse even if we had no concerts to give. And her husband, Tony, is an integral part of the team. He's a page turner for Dorothy, but also looks after us, drives us around, makes us lunch. And we're a three-person outfit.
And is an organist.
He is an organist, and he does piano duets with Dorothy too. Yeah. But we play often in Exeter at St. Stephen's Church, also at Southern Hay, in Topsham at St. Margaret's, and frequently at Glen Orchy, the URC Church in Exmouth. We've got a concert. The next one, I think, is on the 1st of July. That's on a Saturday morning in Exeter at the URC Church. We're doing some pieces, really nice pieces by Brooke, some dance movements from one of his suites. And then we're going to pair that with some Bartok folk dances that we've literally just found. So those are new for us. We're playing some three romances by Schubert, which again are new to both of us. We've performed them just once a few weeks ago. And then there'll be a bit of sort of more sort of lighter jazzy stuff as well. We like to give a varied program.
Yeah. Not Stranger on the Shore, you're not doing that?
Possibly it might poke its head up as an encore if one is required.
Yeah. Well, would that be a good point to conclude our talk with you performing Stranger on the Shore? I did a piece of research. You probably know this. Stranger on the Shore was released in October 1961 by Acca Bilk. It became, in 1962, the biggest selling single in the UK, spending 55 weeks in the chart, though it was kept off the top spot by Cliff Richard's The Young One. So not many people know that, but I thought I'd put that in. And is there anything you want to say about it? Is it a fairly difficult or...?
It's technically quite an easy piece to play.
Okay.
So I'm going to play Stranger on the Shore. It does repeat the whole piece. I'll just play it through once for you because I don't have an accompaniment. And I'm just going to give you a very little demo before I start of the Acca Bilk style, which I'm not going to replicate. So he did a very, very wide vibrato. So you sort of hear this. Which, as a classical player, I find a little raucous. It's not a sound I love, so you're going to probably be disappointed now. I'm going to play the Phil version in a slightly more classical, less vibrato, but I will still lean that way a bit. So here
more,
you go.
More refined.
More refined, that's yes. It. Just for Dawlish.
Thank you.
Wonderful, thank you. You couldn't play that on the oboe, could you?
It would be a bit duck-like, yes. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in and playing for us, Phil, and sharing your enthusiasm for the instrument. We
really
very much
it.
Appreciate it. So thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Our thanks go to Jenny Jenkins and her guest, Laura Hughes, Valerie Forrester, Fran Frank, Mary MacDonald, Stephen Taylor, Aileen Clarkson, Babs Astley, John Townsend, and his guest, Phil Bonser.
Thanks also to Diana Coulson and Margaret Reynolds for copying and dispatching the USB sticks, and to Sarah Williams for uploading the programme to our website. The programme was compiled and produced by Camilla Taylor and edited by Stephen Taylor.
So from Fran and me,
goodbye. Goodbye.
Hello, this is David Beard of the British Wireless for the Blind Fund. This is a message to all of those who are listening to this publication on their smartphone, smart tablet, whether that be Android or iOS, so Apple or Google. As of the end of September 2023, you will no longer be able to access this Talking Newspaper and any of the others through the Talking Newspaper application. You will need to move over to our new Speech Talking Newspaper app, which has a number of updates. You can now save your favourite newspaper, and you can now also use your voice to control user commands, such as play a Talking Newspaper name, for example. We hope that none of you will find this too difficult. All you need to do is go back to Play Store or App Store and type in Speech Talking Newspaper, and you will find the app there. The new app now requires users to sign in. This is so that we can support you better. If you have any difficulties or problems signing in, just call us on 01622 754 757 and select the technical option, which is option 5, and we'll be able to help you. Thank you. Bye-bye.